Welcome to the Amazing Data Podcast. What's up, guys? Welcome back to our data-oriented show and to the newest episode in the solo format. Today in our reading room, we will be talking about the revolutionary paper Computing Machinery and Intelligence by the outstanding English mathematician Alan Turing. This pioneering work was published 70 years ago. A nice anniversary right there. So as long as this season's topic is AI and all kind of developments connected and related to this topic, I think it will be nice to see where it all came from, how it all started, and how many of the Alan Turing's insights actually turned out to be true after such a long time. So before we actually dive into the topic, I think it will be important to mention that Alan Turing never actually referred to intelligence in machines in the meaning that it ended up having today. So nobody's talking about brains and machine rising. It all is closer to the fiction works rather than to the scientific research that we're referring to today. And instead of trying to prove whether machines can think, like in a very human way of approaching the situation, thinking, he shifted the focus onto the question of whether machines can imitate humans efficiently enough that whoever will be in contact with them, with it, the machine, will fail to actually understand that they're communicating with a machine, not a human. And that would be the real absence of flesh and blood with their vis-a-vis. So the proposed approach in terms of that experiment is now known as Turing test. And for those of you listeners who is not actually familiar with how does it work, and we're going to take a closer look to the issue. So the experiment is based on popular Victorian times game, where the players needed to find out if the person hidden behind the curtain in another room is a man or a woman. In the Turing's variation, which is called imitation game, the aim is more at figuring out whether the hidden companion is a human or a machine. So using the communication device, in the times of the paper, it was the teleprinter, but logically it evolved into chats and messengers these days. The judges are allowed to ask various questions, which they think would help them distinguish who is who. So who is a machine and who is a human. The game begins, and to make it more exciting and less predictable, the mysterious participants are trying to confuse the judge with their answers, putting one's reasonings to the test. So humans are trying to act like a machine and probably answer in some artificial ways, and the machine acting like a human, being more, you know, like flamboyant and easy to talk to. So if the human's mischief can actually be easily spotted by giving a complex mathematical problem, which cannot be solved with even with usage of a calculator in a short period of time, the machine's game code might be more tricky to crack. So the machine might withhold giving out the answers to the problem, you know, like to imitate whether they are the humans, needing more time to think about that, even though they actually solve that probably in like milliseconds time after receival. So that would make them seem more like a human. Asking personal questions, you know, like about childhood, first love, or, you know, like preferences in food or whatever, might also not work because the feeding answers were considerably prepared by the developers of the machine. So in the very end, the machine's game would boil down to doing its best to fool the judges, to just make them think that the machine is not what it is. In his paper, Alan Turing supposed that in 50 years' time, so that being 2000, it will be possible to program computers, that's quote-unquote, with a storage capacity of about 10 power 9, to make them play the imitation game so well that an average interrogator will not have more than 70% chance of making the right identification after 5 minutes of questioning. It wasn't actually about those 5 minutes timing in the very beginning, but it actually shows a very important part of the test. The more time you have, the easier it is for a machine to give it away, to show you, you know, like to slip on some answer and provide something that would actually help you realize that this is a machine. But in terms of 5 minutes, it will be more complicated. So this assumption became real 12 years later than noted. So we got a little bit late on that. In the first Turing test marathon, the judges were fooled in 20% cases by the program called Eugene Gutzman, which posed itself as a 13-year-old boy from Ukraine, increasing this achievement 2 years later with 33% of misleading chances. In 2015, a new AI childlike program called Sonya Gusieva, now being programmed fully in Russian, fooled the judges in 47% of the cases. So while you are absorbing all of those information and details, here comes one curious observation I would like to share with you. I was reading a few months ago a book by Dr. Andrei Kurpatov, a famous therapist and author, and I noted a very interesting experiment described, which I would like to share with you. So imagine a monkey sitting in a cage. I'll refer to it as she, so that will be easier for us to understand what am I referring to. There are two boxes in front of her, and she, this monkey, saw how experimenters put a banana in one of those boxes. Then another experimenter, with whom the monkey is not familiar yet, entered the room and opened the box, which the monkey had pointed at. If there was a banana inside, the experimenter gave it to the monkey as a reward, you know, like for being collaborative and for showing where the banana is. If the box was empty, then logically, monkey got left without a food. So throughout time, the monkey realized that in order to get a treat, she needs to point at the right box. So she quickly learned to always pick the banana box. Then this sort of experiment got more complicated. One of the experimenters was the good one. If the monkey chose the banana box, the good experimenter gave her the fruit. But the bad experimenter acted differently. Once the monkey pointed at the banana box, the bad guy took the banana and ate it oneself in front of the shocked monkey. Like, I just gave you away where the banana is. How you could do that? So the poor animal learned the hard way who is good and who is bad. And further on, once the nice guy entered the room, she showed the banana box because she knew that this way she will get the reward. Once the bad guy entered the room, the little trickster acted like she had no idea what she's asked about, like what boxes, what are we talking about? Only not to give away the banana box place. Moreover, with time, the monkey turned to the dark side and became truly evil. Once the bad guy entered the room, she intentionally pointed at the empty box so that no one would get anything. You hear that? You hear that evil coming out of every action? That is horrible. But the point of this example is that the monkey might have not always understood what was happening, you know, like the whole underlying meaning of these events and why those people were taking her bananas, but she quickly adjusted and learned how to trick her assessors for her own benefit, for her own fruit award. So in terms of the imitation game, the machines are trying to trick their judges into thinking that they're humans, making lines and misleading. Sound very human behavior, right? But does the excellence in trickery actually mean intelligence? That is one of the Pandora box questions we're not going to open and won't let our monkey to do so. Now back to, you know, like more official and boring stuff. The Oxford Dictionary defined intelligence as the ability to learn, understand, and think in a logical way about things. Doesn't machines already do all of those things? The ability to absorb information in a beyond human level capacity actually allows machines to act smart and intelligent. Even being disconnected from internet, the IBM's Watson assistant won the Jeopardy intellectual game. Even being confronted with the longtime winners, you know, like of the humankind, based on the data that these assistant already had. In this particular case, it indeed did all of the things from the definition. It learned the data, understood the questions, thought in its own logical way, well, which sounds more like a programmed search engine, but we're not going to dive into that, and won the show. So does that actually mean that the intelligence in its Oxford definition has already been reached by the machines? So that example might have misled you a little bit, making it seem like only data processing is the key to intelligence. Which is not. The access to the world's archives and various datasets fed to algorithms in order to tackle a specific problem that humans cannot solve on their own does not still cover the notion. Look at the Deep Thought, supercomputer from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I love that book and I'm going to reference that as many times as possible, which took 7.5 million years of calculation and analysis to find the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything, and still got it as far as 42. To the approval of all Douglas Adams fans and even being straight from fiction example, it still gives you the idea of data storage not being equal to intelligence. It is becoming so confused, you know, this edge between the fiction and the reality. Currently, the AI-based algorithms can pretty much do all those things that you can imagine humans are doing. Writing articles, teaching, grading tests, painting pictures, conducting music, running deliveries even, perform surgical manipulations, work in labs and dangerous production facilities. You can name whatever, and pretty much there's some algorithm that is involved in there. And yet still, we are not conquered by the almighty Skynet and other. So what's the trick? I feel that the key to filling the equation of AI equals human is the human element itself. So the emotional side can be constructed in the algorithmic sequence of reactions to various irritations, which would enable the machine act humanishly. But would that actually mean that machine is human? Would the, for example, the built-in tears generator, which would activate upon sad moments in the movie, actually mean being human? How about family bonds, affection to pets, or nostalgia about past times? Is it possible to program those kind of components? Well, again, another reference. Remember what happened to Cyberman in Doctor Who when they regained emotions? All those superior technologies burned down in the overwhelm. So I suppose that this is a nice edge to actually build between AI and humans, that this emotional and this biological part that is still cannot be replicated in the human way. We have it our own human way. So Alan Turing hoped that machines will compete with humans in all purely intellectual fields. And it was up to us to think carefully which ones to develop first. And I kind of think that even though this assumption has been made 70 years ago, it's still valid these days. I do believe that in terms of creation of any kind of whatever it would be, humans are very way behind already all the algorithms that they've prepared and created, and probably proceed losing to the advancing intelligence of the machines. But the power of humans and their ability to be simple and emotional, probably not the best weapon in the digital era, but totally will do for the foreseen future. And I'm looking forward to see what kind of innovations are still going to develop through time and how that would happen in the nearest future and probably in long, long years afterwards. But it seems like we as a humankind are still safe for a pretty long time. Which is a good sign, because that means that you can keep listening to our awesome and amazing podcast. I really hope you guys like this new format. Next time we will be having a new guest who actually will be telling us about one of those fancy innovations that I've been mentioning in my talk. So stay tuned. Keep supporting the Amazing Data Project. And it was nice having you here. That was the solo episode of Ksenia's reading book. We were talking about Alan Turing's Computing Machinery and Intelligence, published 70 years ago. Stay tuned and have a great day, guys. See ya. This has been another episode of Amazing Data Podcast. My name is Ksenia. Stay tuned for more awesome stories about data, and have a great day.